Learning to Love, written by Barbara Cartland, narrated by Anthony Wren. Chapter 1, 1880. The Earl of Carriston walked into White's Club in St. James's Street. The club's porter, having welcomed him, politely informed him, "The club secretary, my lord, would like to have a word with you when you have time." The Earl did not reply, because he knew exactly what the secretary wanted to have a word with him about. He had not paid his subscription for the simple reason that he had not had enough money to make the payment. He walked into the morning room, and seeing a friend of his at the far end, he walked across to join him. Lord Shield looked up in surprise.
"Hello, Michael," he exclaimed. "I thought you were in the country."
The Earl sat down rather heavily in the chair next to his. "I came up to London," he told him, "to see my solicitor."
"Trouble?" Lord Shield inquired.
"Very bad trouble," the Earl replied, "and I would be grateful if you would stand me a drink, because I literally cannot afford one." His friend did not argue. He merely signalled to a steward and ordered a bottle of champagne.
"I'm very sorry for you, Michael," he said when they were alone. "Are things worse than they ever have been?"
"Far, far worse." He spoke with a note of despair in his voice, which his companion could not fail to miss. The two young men had been at Oxford together, and had then joined the same regiment. They had fought in the Sudan, and spent some very uncomfortable months during the troubles in Abyssinia. When the Earl had inherited his title, he had resigned his commission in the army and returned home. Lord Shield had done the same 6 months later. Whenever they had the chance, they met, as both of them owned large estates in the country. Now, as they waited for the champagne to arrive, Lord Shield was recalling that last year had been a particularly bad harvest, and every landowner had been affected. He had heard the story that the Earl was having a particularly difficult time on his estate. There was a silence for a little while, and then Lord Shield said,
"Tell me the worst. You know, Michael, that I will help you if I possibly can."
"Nobody can help me," the Earl responded gloomily. "I am completely finished.
The best thing I could do would be to put a bullet through my head."
"That'd be so ridiculous. It cannot be as bad as that."
"It is worse."
"Tell me what has happened."
"It is the usual story which we have heard from so many others, and thought could never happen to us." He stopped speaking because the champagne had arrived. Lord Shield raised his glass.
"To the future," he toasted, "and may it be very much better than the past."
"I will certainly drink to that," the Earl said. "But quite frankly for me, it is impossible."
"That is a word I very much dislike," Lord Shield remarked. "But pray, continue with your story."
"It is, I am afraid, such a familiar and dull story. My father felt incapable of coping with the estate, and let it fall into rack and ruin." He paused for a moment. "He was ill for quite a few years before he died. The servants he trusted left him, and the rest pilfered everything, while the house fell into pieces." He took a deep sip of his champagne. "The debts piled up one on top of another, and what I am now facing is an enormous number of bills which cannot be met. I have nothing to sell, and have not the slightest idea how I can pay them." Lord Shield sighed.
"Ah, I wish I could help you, Michael. But as you well know, I have been walking a tightrope for very much the same reason as you. All I can offer you would hardly feed a rat for a week, let alone horses and cattle, or anything else you possess."
"They are very likely to starve anyway," the Earl said dejectedly. "Only this morning, before I came to London, the man who supplies the oats for the horses and the other foodstuffs required on the farm has refused to deliver anything more until I pay his bill."
"Have you nothing you could sell?"